Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
I'm Dr. Fiona Lovely, and this is the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast. I'm taking the taboos of menopause and perimenopause and bringing light to the dark. No bullshit, no shame. It's time for us to gain a new paradigm in female health, out with the old and in with the new, and I'm bringing fresh perspectives from someone in the arena. I've been practicing women's health for nearly 20 years, and I'm spilling the tea on what it means to live at midlife, knowing that the best is yet to come. I'm sharing my Gen X approach to living through this transition, sassy, a bit sweary, and always honest. Tactical tips and instantly usable information is my aim. I hope to make you laugh and that you learn something new that helps you embrace the change. Together, we bring power to the peri. Onward to the podcast. Hey, hey, listeners. This is Dr. Fiona Lovely and the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast. How you doing today? I'm so excited to be reporting from a beautiful sunny day with blue sky. Here in Calgary, we've had tons of snow. I just heard this morning we had three times what we normally have in the month of March, which is good. I guess the gardens need it. This is what we tell ourselves at this time of the year. If you're Canadian, you totally understand what I'm talking about. If you're not, just keep moving in the direction of the podcast. Okay, I have an awesome guest to share with you today. I am talking to Dr. Siobhan Wright. Dr. Siobhan Wright is a naturopathic doctor with a background in high-performance training and fitness, as well as clinical focus in women's health and perimenopause. She is particularly interested in how a woman's changing physiology requires a shift in training, fueling, and mindset in order to feel and perform your best through midlife and beyond. Dr. Siobhan holds a Bachelor of Naturopathy from the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine, a rigorous four-year full-time program, as well as an Honors Bachelor of Arts degree in Kinesiology and Physical Education from Wilfrid Laurier University. Dr. Siobhan is the mother of three active young boys, a workout enthusiast, and adventure seeker. And man, we had this really great conversation. I am so interested in the topic of how we get stronger at midlife, or how we can get stronger by lifting weights, creating muscle, optimizing protein, optimizing muscle strength, because the muscle itself is the medicine. Isn't that fascinating? So you're going to hear me talking about this quite a bit because I'm on my own journey to do this for myself. I want to teach my patients, and I certainly want to teach you, my beautiful podcast community, about how to do it and do it well. So first thing I want to say is please go follow Dr. Wright on Instagram. She can be found at drdr.wright, W-R-I-G-H-T.nd, as in naturopathic doctor. That's dr.wright.nd. And she has lots of great information on her Instagram page. So please go follow her. You can also go to her website, which is thrivingfamilies.ca. Now, she has this in-person program called Learn to Lift that I'm really quite excited about. And I have encouraged her to see if she can get it moving to the online platform because, well, we're both Canadians. We're on the other sides of the country from each other. So I want to take this program and I certainly want to send my patients to take it as well. And because she started weightlifting at the age of 13, she has like a lifetime experience with it. And she can really see what a woman needs and educate us on what needs to happen. And she said some really great things in this conversation. Like she said, before we learn to lift heavy, because there's a lot of conversation if you're following Instagram Menopause, they're talking about lifting heavy. And I love that idea. But as a chiropractor, I'm like, okay, hang on a second. We don't need to create back issues. I see a lot of women injure themselves with deadlifts. So that's something I kind of just broad spectrum say, please don't do that unless you really, really, really know what you're doing. But don't start there. There's so many other great things you can do. And this is what Dr. Siobhan teaches us, is how to lift properly before you lift heavy. And I just think that's fantastic. We talk a great deal about the recovery piece, which is so, so important for women in midlife, and how to easily add tasty foods to prioritize protein. For example, she told me that pumpkin seeds are the highest in protein of all the nuts and quite delicious, I might add, and pretty much easy to add to just about anything, even if you're just eating them as a snack in the middle of the afternoon. It's a great way to get protein. So I love that. We talk about protein prioritization, which is a fascinating concept where the brain will seek protein, will seek consumption of calories until it gets the protein it needs. So ultimately, even if you think you're craving salty, crunchy, what it really wants is protein first, and then likely the craving of salty, crunchy or sweet will go away. Again, these life hacks, these longevity hacks are so useful, I think is the way I want to say it. I'm thinking about these things in a really different way and loading my plate, eating first the things that will fuel my body and my brain. So again, seeking vitality, longevity, but also important for recovery, because as we are lifting, as we are exercising for health, then there's a whole different way we can get fuel in there to maximize our recovery. Really, really important. Dr. Wright does a great job of walking us through that. She also talks a lot about when and how much to consume, even if you're fasting. She's got some great tips around that. And you know, I love talking about fasting on this show. So please have a listen to the conversation between Dr. Siobhan Wright, naturopathic doctor, and myself. Again, I learned a ton with this conversation, so be ready to take notes and to see your body at midlife in a different way. So as always, thanks for listening. And before we get to the interview, here's a word from our sponsor.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Well, hello there. It's Dr. Fiona Lovely and the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast. And I'm so excited to have a naturopathic colleague joined me today, Dr. Siobhan Wright. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's really cool to have you here. I know you are chock full of the goodies that I can't wait to ask you about, and you have such good information to share. So thank you again for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Fiona. It's a long time coming. I feel like we started talking about this a year ago, and
yes,
finally, here we are.
I think so. It's been a long time. And of course, we know each other through a mentorship, a mindset mentor that we were in a group with together. So I just think that's so cool. And I love interviewing other Canadian practitioners. So here you go. And you're based out of Toronto, yes?
I am in Toronto. Yep. East end of Toronto. That's where my practice is. That's where I run my programs from.
Awesome. So how did you find yourself a naturopath working with women's health?
My journey to naturopathic medicine isn't a super interesting one, but I discovered the modality in my 20s when I had some health struggles and was just sort of blown away with the way that naturopathic medicine views the person as a whole, and they take their time. They're very thorough. They're not siphoning out all your different systems separately and looking at you as a whole person. And so I jumped in pretty quickly, but the way I came back to women's health and athletics and lifting weights, et cetera, is I have a background in high performance athletics as a teenager, and I started lifting weights at about 13. I've always lifted weights. I've always come back to it. I've you know, paused for periods of time having kids and in school, but I've always come back to it, and I've always found it to be so, so helpful for not only my physical health, but my mental health, my energy, just how I sleep, how I feel. And the more I learn about it, the more I realize how incredibly important it is for women, especially as we transition into menopause, to have muscle as an asset, as like an insurance policy for aging. Gabrielle Lyons said the quote, "Muscle is like the holy grail of aging well." I believe it was her who said that. There's so much to having muscle, and I think we benefit so much from it. And there's so much research coming out lately and talk about it lately that I have circled back my practice to teaching women how to lift weights properly. Just backing up a little bit, after I did my kinesiology degree, I spent 5 years doing personal training. I knew that wasn't the career for me, but I really loved it. I really loved the health aspect, the fitness aspect, the counseling aspect, and ended up in naturopathic medicine. But I love that I've circled back to that part of my career, and I can meld the two together, which is really fun.
I'd say that's fantastic and so needed.
Yes.
And isn't it fascinating that our generation has been the one to really figure out how we do this longevity thing properly? And of course, it's going to be us. Of course.
Yes.
We don't sit quietly. Let's just put it that way.
No, we don't. You
know? And we're also responsible for saying, no, we want better options during menopause. And what
Absolutely.
You're saying, right? And what you're saying is we're not just looking at the whole person, which I love what you said about that. You're looking at the whole person as a whole, which is missing terribly from Western medicine. We have all these silos where everybody, so this is the thyroid specialist and that's the liver specialist and that, you know, all of that. But really, we are a system. And of course, that was the system I was trained under as well. And I, you and I could agree that that is the way to really look at human beings is holistically. So now you said muscle is medicine. I love this. Can you tell us more about that, please?
I can. So there's so much research on movement itself and exercise itself. And if there was a magic pill, exercise is it. It decreases our all-cause mortality across the board. There are so many things that we can thwart in terms of disease and aging well, or aging poorly, I should say, when we have more muscle on our bodies. And so some of the things that we see when we have more muscle is we have a faster metabolism. When we have a faster metabolism, we're going to burn more calories at rest. We have an easier time maintaining our body composition. And this is something I want to shift the mindset of everyone, especially women. We've grown up in such a, well, I grew up in such a generation that it's always been about diet culture and thinness and losing and restriction. And I want to bring us back to like, what do we have to gain rather than what are we trying to lose? Because when we're in this, like, I have to lose weight mentality, we feel it's just a yucky feeling. And that's not actually where we want to be mentally. We want to be like, what do I have to gain? What do I need to gain in order to feel better? and have all of the things that I want, like energy and vitality and longevity and independence and no chronic disease or less chronic disease, right? And so if we can shift our mindset to gaining muscle rather than losing weight, because it's not really about losing weight. You can gain muscle and your weight stays exactly the same, but your metabolic markers, your blood markers, your energy, like everything can change without losing a single pound. And that's not to say that some people don't need to lose some weight, but we don't want to lose that lean muscle mass because it has so much benefit for us. So some of those benefits would be like our faster metabolism. We're burning more calories at rest. We actually burn more fat while we're exercising when we have more muscle on our skeleton. We have stronger joints. Our joint strength and stability become compromised as we age, especially at menopause, because of the change in hormones. And so we'll experience more joint pain and instability around this time. And so when we lift heavier, when we lift weights, we lift heavier weights, we stimulate some of those tendons to increase their tension, which results in more stability in the joints. For myself, I suffer from knee pain if I'm not lifting weights regularly. And when I am, my joint is just stronger. There's less like pressure on my joints. And when there's more weight on the joint, it's going to cause more pain. You would know that well.
Yes.
Your line of work. The benefits for our bones. The rates of osteoporosis and osteopenia are quite high, and they become much higher as we get older, especially past menopause with the loss of estrogen. So when we have more muscle, we have better balance. We reduce the risk of falls and fractures. And we know like hip fractures kill women. It's a high cause of death for women, which is, it's so sad to me.
Yeah. So what you're connecting the muscle to all of these things that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not even finished.
I know. No, and we want this as we get older. Yeah. I love that. And I love what you've said about the gain mentality, because you're absolutely right. Yeah. Especially in our age group. Like we grew up watching our mothers, our aunties, our grandmothers. Suffering in the diet industry. Right. Mm-hmm. And so those are some really old neurons in our brains saying, this is the way you do it. And I love the repackaging of it. So muscle as a longevity tool. What did you say Gabrielle Lyons says? She says it's a holy grail of
the
longevity.
Holy grail of aging well.
I love that.
I have to check back and see if it was actually her. I may have like spun her words, and anyways, doesn't matter who said it. But
We will credit her for that. Yeah. She's really spearheading, along with Dr. Stacy Sims, who's been one of your teachers as well, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I did her Menopause 2.0 course, which was really in depth, really long, but like I just ate it up so quickly because I love geeking out on the science of muscle and, you know, women's health. And it was a beautiful course. I highly recommend it for anyone.
So tell me, how much has changed in terms of the information delivered between the course you took from Dr. Stacy Sims and what you learned in naturopathic school about menopause?
I don't think I learned anything in naturopathic school about menopause, to be very honest. Yeah.
What?
I'm trying to think if there was ever, you know, we had a, honestly, maybe I should start a course there.
Oh my God.
About
yes.
menopause specifically. And it's similar to the conventional system. You have gynecologists who are very well trained, OBs and gynecologists who are very well trained in like obstetrics and, you know, pregnancy and delivering babies. But I don't think they get a whole lot of training in menopause.
And that's
maybe
what
some
heard.
Of them will do. Obviously, some people will do advanced training, but I don't think it's a big part of the.
If advanced training is even available, right? Like this is the thing about. I've heard Dr. Mary Claire Haver talk about this. She says, not every woman will have a baby, but every woman, if she lives long enough, will go through menopause. So it's a little bit upside down how we learn OBGYN. So really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Really
I had not thought of that, Fiona, until you said that. I really don't think we learned about menopause. So This is all just continuing ed training for me. And I've done a deep dive in it in the last like 3-4 years. And you'll see my website is Thriving Families, because that's what I used to focus on. I need a rebrand desperately. because my focus in the last bunch of years has been more on menopause and aging well.
What's your favorite thing to teach women in this age group?
How to build muscle.
Tell us how.
We need to lift heavier weights. So typically, you probably ask women in practice all the time, what do you do for movement? And they might mention they have like their 5-pound weights that they pick up in their basement, and maybe they like lift them over their head 10 times. And we need to actually be doing heavier weights, because what happens when we transition and we lose estrogen? So estrogen has 3 key roles in helping us lay down muscle mass. So this is going to get a little bit sciencey, but I think you'll appreciate, maybe some of your audience members will too.
Oh, I will. Bring it on. Bring it on.
So when we have more estrogen in our system, more of our satellite cells will become muscle cells. So satellite cells are like the cells that have not differentiated and decided what they're going to be. Are they going to be brain cells? Are they going to be skin cells? Are they going to be liver cells? When we have more estrogen in our system, more of those cells will become muscle cells. So there's one way that estrogen is helping us in our reproductive years. The second way is acetylcholine. So we have a nerve that comes down and it will innervate a muscle. And in between the nerve ending and the muscle is a gap junction. Acetylcholine is something that helps to stimulate that muscle to contract strongly or not so strongly. When we have more estrogen around, we have more acetylcholine in the gap junction. So that nerve firing of the muscle will be much stronger. And then the third way is within the muscle fiber itself, we have actin and myosin, which basically helps to like pull the muscle fibers along and glide them along against each other to make that muscle contraction stronger. Estrogen will, I believe it's the myosin is the little grabby part that grabs onto actin. There's more myosin available and in that muscle cell that helps to make the muscle contraction strong. So those are 3 key things that are making it so much easier for women to have muscle in their reproductive years. And we kind of like the younger, you know, in our 20s and 30s, it's so easy. We don't even, when we try, it's just easier to gain it. And so if we're not laying down muscle as we transition towards menopause, and the earlier the better for many reasons, the more muscle we're going to lose, the harder it is going to be to gain it in during that transition. And what we see in the transition, there's the 4 years that straddle menopause. We see in large population studies that during those 4 years, we see a rise in fat mass and a loss of muscle mass. Unlike our male counterparts who age at a very sort of steady decline, women have this like rapid shift in aging and body composition in those 4 years. Unless we're working to gain the muscle earlier, the better. But, you know, in our 40s, that's a great time to be lifting heavy and getting into the habit of lifting heavy weights. So yes, heavy weights is how we do it.
How do we do that safely?
So we don't start with heavy weights. We start with learning how to lift weights properly. So hiring a coach, doing a group program. I find that a lot of group exercise programs like boot camps and stuff, they're not slowing down enough to teach the technique and the form. And so I know not everyone has access or funds to hire a personal trainer, but there's so much on YouTube. There's so many instructional videos that are available to everyone to teach form doing those exercises. So we start with lighter weights. We start with just like getting the movement pattern safely, and we do that repetitively at a higher rep count and a lower weight until we have good form, we have good muscle memory, and we don't have to think about what we're doing when we're lifting the heavier weight so that we don't injure ourselves.
Interesting. You know, I asked my local Y recently about this, the YMCA. And I said, you know, I want to take a class that's going to teach me how to do it properly. I can do it myself once I figured out, you know, but it's technique. As a chiropractor, I know how important technique is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mostly, I know just how many people injure themselves doing deadlifts, but that's beside the point. between deadlifts and the inflatable tubes that are towed behind boats in the summertime, those are the two things that keep me in business.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Not hilarious, but hilarious. Yeah, yeah. I remember very well in my teens being whipped off one of those tubes. And like, I had serious whiplash.
Exactly.
But it was like a game. It was like, let's try and get this person off of this thing. So yeah.
God, our youth was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, our youth, we had like all the things that are banned now. We had the slip and slide, and we had those lawn darts and all kinds of things you could injure yourself.
Absolutely.
Anyways, so this is just the modern version of it. But I asked at my local Y because I'm super intimidated by this, even though I know muscles and anatomy and physiology mm-hmm. and all of that. Mm-hmm. But just on a personal level, I'm just super intimidated by it. And I suspect a lot of my listeners feel the same way I do. And so recently in the last 6 months, I asked them, I said, so what have you got? Because, you know, generally speaking, the Y is a pretty good structure for these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they structure groups in by size, meaning you can have a large group. I think the largest group is 8. Mm-hmm. And then you can have a smaller group where it's only 2. Or you can just have the trainer by yourself. So you have options, which is really nice.
Okay, cool.
And the thing I loved about the Y too is that because it's they do so much community work that there's opportunities for scholarships and sort of thing for essentially anybody that is a member.
Amazing.
I happen to be a member, but this mm-hmm. is the thing. I still have to pay for it even as a member.
Yeah.
But they do it based on age. So the groups are based on age, which I love because I would love to be in a group of 50 something women like myself, mm-hmm. where we're all just there kind of trying to figure out what it means to lift well mm-hmm. at this age.
Yeah.
That is way less intimidating for me. I haven't joined a group yet. It's on my list. But then if I was to know there was going to be, you know, 18 and 20 year olds in there, which is fine. But mm-hmm. again, it's such a different conversation.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's a different conversation because so much of our physiology is different in, you know, after menopause, like around the transition. They can, you know, 20s, 30s, you can lift lighter weight and still get the gains from it. But we want to be recruiting as many muscle fibers as possible for those lifts so that we can overcome some of the challenges that come with having less estrogen or no estrogen.
So Dr. Lyons talks about, and I know Dr. Vonda Wright talks about this as well, about how muscle acts as essentially like an endocrine organ.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Part of it is the effect on insulin. When we have more muscle, and especially after we've lifted, we don't require as much or any insulin in some cases to allow blood sugar to be cleared. So after we eat a meal, we're going to have a spike in blood sugar. That's quite normal. The more muscle we have on our skeleton, the less we need insulin to kind of, I think of it as like a lock and key. Insulin opens the door to the cells to allow that sugar to be absorbed into those cells. When we have more muscle, the lock and key is really smooth and it opens that door really easily. Whereas on the other hand, if we have insulin resistance, that lock and key is very rusty. It doesn't open the door very well. And therefore, our blood sugar stays high. So that's one of the sort of endocrine effects or hormonal effects of having more muscle. I can't explain more of it because part of it is a little bit more new to me. I was just reading about it this morning, but I don't have it like solidified in my head, but that's one of the ways that muscle is an endocrine organ for us, which is brilliant because insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes is rampant.
Absolutely. Well, and it's new research for all of us,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
We're really just starting to understand it, which is cool. The possibility of that is just extraordinary. I mean, there's so many reasons to get your exercise, your movement in, but if we're adding that on top of it, you know, it's brilliant. So I've heard recently that women over a certain age need to consume protein in particular shortly after having a workout in order to not have the loss. I'm actually not even sure the loss of what, the loss of protein, the loss of muscle mass. I'm not really sure. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. So unlike, again, our male counterparts, they have a longer window of opportunity to get those amino acids in to actually rebuild the muscle that we've been breaking down during the workout. So during our workout, we're not actually building muscle. We're just breaking down muscle tissue. And the older we get, and if we're biologically female, the more we need to shorten that window. And it's about, Stacey Sims talks about it being about 30 to 45 minutes. That window of opportunity is to get our amino acids in so that we turn on the process of mTOR and muscle protein synthesis. That process is basically like the body gets the signal when there is enough protein, specifically the amino acid leucine. We need about 2.5 grams of leucine, which is why we see leucine in branched chain amino acids. It's also higher in animal proteins. And when we have enough of that, then we turn on mTOR, muscle protein synthesis, and we make muscle from that workout. It's not to say it's not possible to still make muscle if we miss that window, but we have a better chance of doing it. And we are more in the menopause transition and into menopause, we are more protein insensitive or more protein resistant, I should say. And so we need to have more protein in general and more frequent doses of protein in order to keep up and gain muscle mass.
Okay, what did you just say? It was protein resistance? Is that the term you used?
Yeah, protein resistance. Kind of like insulin resistance. It's the same idea. Like we're not as sensitive to the protein coming in, which is why we need more of it. And we need it more frequently throughout the day.
Okay, this is a big topic. So I know generally speaking from talking to women every day and asking them what they eat, that certainly we don't take in enough protein. We take in proteins that may not be as efficient as they could be or have been in the past when we were younger. Mm-hmm. And just overall, we sort of start to lose the hunger for proteins as we get older. And that's part of it too. And having spent time with my elderly mother and watching how the others around her in her apartment ate, I could see that they wanted the carby things, but they would often leave the proteinaceous things on their plate. So there's something going on here. Like, please talk about this.
Part of that is like carbohydrates are very easy to overconsume. They're very tasty. We're talking about like our pastries and our crackers and our breads and like those things are delicious.
Yes,
they're
they
easy
are.
To eat. They're very easy to eat. They're very easy to overconsume. There's things going on in the brain when we eat them. They're very addicting. And so that's part of it. And that's part of why we overconsume them societally. As we get older too, we deplete our zinc gets depleted. And so our taste buds aren't as strong. And so the tastier foods are more appetizing. The elderly need protein so much more than like the 20, 30 year old. Like we can turn on muscle protein synthesis, I think in children and maybe into our 20s, we can turn that process on with about 10 grams of protein. In menopause and thereafter, we need about 30 to 40 grams to turn it on. It's wild. It's wildly different. And there's more need to have that protein around.
Let's pull this apart a little bit. So first of all, muscle protein synthesis. Can you talk about that and maybe even talk about mTOR? Because you have dropped that term. Mm-hmm. So I know that's an important one, especially for longevity. So let's talk about those, please.
Yeah. So mTOR, I don't even know what it stands for. I would have to look it up. But that's the process of like having your body manufacture muscle. It's putting together those amino acids and manufacturing muscle and rebuilding the muscle that you've broken down during the workout. Muscle protein synthesis is just what happens after mTOR is kicked on. Yeah.
mTOR first and then muscle protein synthesis. I'm sure I learned this in school like almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It's so silly to think of, but I know that, and I think this is where they're talking about rapamycin being a pharmaceutical that can step in and help with this process. Is this not where this comes in?
Probably. I don't know much about that, but probably. Yeah.
Peter Attia's book talks about this.
Oh, cool. I haven't read that, but I really want to pick that up. Yeah.
It is. It is.
Yeah, I love him.
He's great, isn't he?
He's amazing. Yeah.
Yes. Dr. Attia and his podcast is called The Drive, and the book is called Outlive. And Dr. Atiyah, if you're listening, I'd love to have you on the show. Please reach out to my people. And by my people, I mean me.
Yes, please do, Peter. Please do.
Please do. That would be fantastic.
Actually, I know somebody who grew up with him, so maybe I could hook you up.
He apparently grew up in Toronto. He does talk about that in the book. Cool. Yeah, 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 for sure. I think he lives in Austin now. Like, it seems like all the people live in Austin these days.
Okay. Moved to Austin.
Right? There must be something there. All right. So you said that when we're younger, it takes 10 grams of protein to turn on the muscle protein synthesis, which of course is important for all of the juicy and lovely things that you talked about that we want as we are reaching menopause. Well, we want them for our whole lives, but you don't think about, you know, stability of joints and being without pain and no chronic disease and longevity and can you pick up your grandkids and things like that when you're in your 20s. And that's the stuff we really want to. That's why I think there's such a movement right now where we're talking about muscle building and strength and what are the things you want to be doing when you're older. And I love Peter Atiyah's whole take on this, just because we were just talking about it. Let's bring that up again. But it's in the book. He does talk about it at length in the book and in his show as well. But you're saying that as we get older, we need to take in three times that in order to turn on the MPS.
Yeah, I believe it's somewhere around three times that. It's wild. It's wildly different. Yeah.
And what I've heard is that we want to be taking in 30 grams per meal rather than taking in 100 grams or 120 grams a day.
Yeah, I've heard, I don't remember who it was, but somebody was sort of debunking that. I think it might have been on social media, somebody, an orthopedic surgeon I follow. And I don't know if that was specific to women. I would still prefer that women spread out their protein, despite what I learned there. Because again, that could have been a study on males, and
as it often is,
and it isn't always applicable to women, which is what I love about Stacey Simpson's work. It's all specific to women. And so what she talks about is the studies she's run or she's deciphered about women's specific athletics and performance and training.
And what do you recommend for your female patients in the perimenopause years for protein intake? How do you handle this?
So at a bare minimum, we will start with 30, 30, 30. So 90 grams a day is a good place to start. And it's all based on weight and activity level. So generally, we'll start at, if we want to get more specific than the 30, 30, 30, then we will look at doing 1.5 grams per kilogram. And that's for someone who's not super active. So maybe not even lifting weights yet. If she's lifting weights, then we're going higher than that. So sometimes up to 1.8 or 2 grams per kilogram, which is a lot of protein. And to be honest, it takes a while to get in those habits and have that food around and know how much you're taking in per meal. And sometimes I struggle with it. So it's just, we just do our best, but that's where we're working from.
So it's interesting about protein, because I know I'm paying a lot better attention in the last probably 18 months or so on how much protein I'm taking in and making sure that when I sit down with food or prepare my food, I'm starting with the protein and getting that in first rather than just diving into the delicious carby things like you talked about, the things that are so easy to eat. And I'll say that the first thing that happens is I notice I'm a lot fuller quicker. And then I have a harder time going, okay, I got to finish the vegetables that are on my plate because I know they're good for me too. So how do you counsel women around that?
Around like getting enough food in or
getting the right stuff at the right time. Like it's a matter of how do you consume 30 grams per meal? And what does that look like?
We usually start with, okay, what are you eating already? And then we build it out from there and we'll add in the higher protein foods or we'll make some higher protein swaps with what they're eating. And yeah, like what you said, we start with protein. So what is the meal centered around? It's like, what's our protein? And then what goes with that? From a blood sugar perspective as well, we want to start our meal with eating the protein also, the protein or the fiber, instead of starting with the carbohydrates, because we get a different spike in glucose. even if it's the same meal composition, by starting like front loading that meal with the protein. But yeah, we usually start with where they're at and what they're eating already. If they're eating like breakfast cereal, then we'll do a bigger swap than say someone's eating an egg. Okay, well, can we add another egg, or can we add another egg and some egg whites? Or we just build out from where they are instead of trying to revamp everything, because that's makes it more challenging. But I give them lots of examples of the high protein foods. So like our Greek yogurt, our cottage cheese, our eggs, egg whites, obviously all the meats, seeds. I eat pumpkin seeds a couple times a day because they're, you know, they're a much higher protein food than like nuts would be, for example. You get 15 grams of protein in a third of a cup of pumpkin seeds. So,
oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's great. And they're crunchy and lovely.
They satisfy that salty crunchy.
If you need it. Yeah.
So you, as I was reviewing your social media for this interview, you talked on your page about protein prioritization.
Mm-hmm.
Will you speak about that, please?
Yeah. So that's funny. That reel had over 100,000 views, and like that's never happened to any of my reels. I don't know, somehow the algorithm caught on to it, but I'm glad it did, because it's a really important piece. So protein prioritization. Humans and some animals have something called protein prioritization, where we will continue to eat food whether it contains protein or not. There's a drive in our brain to consume enough protein. It doesn't differentiate between carbohydrate, fat, and protein, but we'll just keep eating. And I see this so much when we add more protein during the day. We have less of a drive to snack. We have less sugar cravings because our brains aren't looking for more food because we're so much more satiated from the protein intake. You said it yourself, you're so much more satisfied, you're filled up faster. Like carbohydrates fill us up, but it's short-lived. It's way shorter lived than when we fill up on protein. That satiation lasts longer. And so I see this over and over again in practice, that when we ramp up our protein, we're not snacking at night, which is part of the problem with weight management. Is like we're just over consuming calories, but what we're actually trying to do is get our protein in. That's a big piece.
Oh, so interesting. I think what you said too, just to sort of say it a different way, because I know the way I heard it, I went, oh my God, I've never heard that before. It's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And correct me if this isn't right. If you don't consume the proteins that your body needs to maintain itself, mm-hmm. then your brain will be food seeking. Yeah. And because we have this love of carbohydrates, they're easy, they're cheap, they're delicious. Yeah. We'll reach for the chips before we'll reach for the beef jerky or the cottage cheese or whatever it is, right? Is that essentially what you're saying?
Yeah, that's essentially what I'm saying. You have it bang on. You said it more eloquently than I did.
It's okay.
Thank you.
I just watched it. So thank you. You taught me two different ways. So what we'll do is we'll just keep seeking and seeking and seeking, thinking that we should be full by now because I've just had six cookies or a bowl of cereal or whatever. In fact, we will not stop that seeking until we reach the protein that the body is actually looking for. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like we need protein for basic physiological functions. And so if we're eating enough protein just to satisfy those physiological needs, our body isn't going to make muscle with any of that protein, which is why we need more than just what our physiology needs. And I think our physiology is like, we need 0.8 grams per kilogram, which is probably what most people around what most people are consuming, unless they're focusing on protein more. That's the problem with under consuming it. We just satisfy those physiology needs because those are primary needs, like for our immune system to make new organs, replace those cells that are turning over. We won't make any muscle from it. And so we need that sort of excess amount to make
and
the muscle.
Even more so as we get older.
Yeah, because especially for women with a loss of estrogen.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Well, and I think, you know, we have these recommendations on what we're supposed to consume daily in terms of protein, fat, carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. And remember when we were kids and the Canada Food Guide said grains was number one? You remember that?
I do.
Terrible. Oh my God. Is it anyone where we are?
Yeah. And I will say that some of my ND colleagues had a say in the new Canada's Food Guide, which is it's miles ahead of where the previous one was. Yeah.
Which is really, really good.
Yeah, it's great.
Thank God the government reached out to holistic health providers. I was trying to be careful on which words I chose there.
Mm-hmm. Not industry, food
exactly.
industry leaders, no, conglomerates.
No.
Yeah.
We don't need to go to the Dairy Association and ask them how much Canadians should be consuming. All of it.
All the time. I mean, and I should say, like, I don't hate on dairy like I used to. I really like it's a high protein. Well, some of them are, I would say a few of them are. High calcium, high protein foods. But yeah, we've probably typically overconsumed them in our milk drinking days. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Well, you talked about it being 0.8. Is it 0.8 grams per kilogram? Is that what you said is the basic amount? Okay.
I think so. It's around there. Like the RDA is 0.8-ish.
Yes. So what I think is really important to point out about that is that when you get that number, when you hear that number, it's not muscle optimization. It is basic need to build muscle. It's not by any means going to get you the longevity, the strength, the anti-aging, the endocrine benefits that we're hoping to gain from muscle.
Exactly. Yeah.
So important to distinguish that. Mm-hmm. So I know there is much discussion these days, I'm sure you've heard it plenty in the office as much as I have, about animal source protein versus vegetable source protein. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if you could tell us a little bit about if someone is a vegetarian, how are they able to consume 30 grams of protein three times a day without taking in a bunch of calories?
It's challenging. It's for sure challenging. And I think there's a lot of benefit to doing some protein powders for those folks because they're not going to be it's not going to be a high calorie add-on, but it will add, you know, it'll get you to your leucine threshold and your amino acid threshold, but we just know that they're not as well absorbed. And so you need to have more of them in order to get to, like, you'll get to that number, but you need to have, I think it's about 30% more protein if it's all vegetarian sources. So vegetarian sources, are we talking vegetarian or vegan? Because there's lots of vegetarian sources, like that would include your eggs and your dairy, which will really help to get you to your protein.
I think threshold. There are. Okay, very good.
Yeah, but if vegan is another story where, we would need to use more protein powder to get to that protein threshold and over and above it by about 30%.
There are people, experts in the podcast world that can talk about how to be a vegan and be healthy. Mm-hmm. I'm not one of those people, so I just generally avoid talking about it. So vegetarian, yes. Plant forward diet, yes. But
absolutely,
you know, how do you get these kinds of things in? That's a really interesting way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. Well, so basically what you've taught us is that we need to lift heavy, but we need to figure out form before we lift heavy.
Yes. Absolutely, please.
And then we need to, within, did you say 30 to 45 minutes, be consuming protein and or amino acid supplement in order to make sure that we are have the best chance of the MPS about, is that correct?
Muscle protein synthesis. Yes, yes, exactly. And I will add to that, for the folks working out in the morning, a lot of women will fast before they go to work out. We need to have at least 10 grams of protein in our system before we head to the gym. And if we're doing any cardiovascular work or HIIT work or anything that's like a little bit more cardio based, then we need to have a little bit of carbohydrate in there too, because our cortisol set point is higher in perimenopause and menopause. And so we don't want to be fasting all night and then fasting through sort of a stressful event, like a workout. So that's important to add in there as well. And you can do that in like just a bit of protein powder and a banana, blend it up. You can even blend it with your coffee, just so you're not heading to your workout on an empty stomach.
I love that. That's great advice. Mm-hmm. I am concerned about, you know, fasting. I love it. We talk about it a lot on the show, and I have for years. It's probably my favorite tool I use in practice, whether I've got brain patients that are having a hard time, or I'm talking to the menopausal, perimenopausal crowd, women in hormonal challenges. But I see it get to be disordered eating and thinking really fast in some women. So I have to be really careful on how I say the pieces that I say. And I think that's just because we have, as I said at the beginning of the show, we grew up in this sort of soup of diet industry that did it all the wrong way. And we're untangling some really old beliefs and programming.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And I think I love what you just said, because I was wondering, how do we do this? First of all, you've given us a little nugget that is, make sure you've got at least 10 grams of protein in your tummy, in your body, plus a little bit of carbs before you go do a morning workout. Mm-hmm. And that has to do with cortisol and all of that. I love that. But how do you do the 30-30-30 grams of protein if you're eating one or two meals a day? Is it just a matter of increasing it per meal?
That's one of the things I don't love about fasting is like, how do you get all the protein in two or one sitting? I don't think it's possible to do it in one sitting. Partly because there's a question around whether or not we can absorb all that protein all at once. I guess amino acid powders would probably have to come into play if we're fasting. And I don't know if they affect, if that would break a fast or not.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I don't know, Fiona.
I might know somebody who can answer that question. I'll get back to you on that one.
Please, I'd love to hear it.
Well, really, because what if we could add that to our bulletproof coffee, right? What if, and then it didn't break the fast, but I don't know, it has a sweet flavor. These things have a sweet flavor. So I'm just wondering if that in itself doesn't break the fast. As soon as the brain perceives the sweetness, it releases insulin. So, and I think that's the trigger for that.
And we can also, like when we consume more protein, we actually can make glucose from our protein. So I don't know if we're going to be making glucose by taking in that amino acid powder.
So this is really where the bio-optimization comes in, or the bio-individuality comes in. For some women, it may make better sense for them to put lifting in and stay at three meals a day and have a shorter fasting window or no fasting at all, versus women who just need to fast. I mean, ultimately, the fasting is an excellent tool for brain health. So it's going to be one of those things where you've just got to have a conversation with your patient and say, what is the best option for you, depending on, you know, your habitus, your history, all of those things. It's a very interesting thing to talk about. Okay. I don't usually make this many notes when I'm doing an episode. So I have so many cool notes, and I'm just
good.
I'm super grateful for this information. And, you know, when you think about what we've talked about in the last hour or so, do you think there's anything missing? Is there anything that you want women to know about these very important tools for doing menopause well, but also aging well?
So something we haven't talked about is sprint training. So just coming back to the training bit, and for too much time, we've spent too much time on the cardio machines. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't do cardio, but if we can make our cardio more efficient and more body specific to this stage of life, sprint training is it. Stacey Sims talks about this a lot. Sprint training is not, you don't have to technically be sprinting, but we're doing like a interval training. So essentially on a cardio type machine or on a hill or on a track or in a pool, we do a sprint length. Sprint training helps us to burn more fat. And it's, we're, as females, we're already endurance adapted. So we don't need to do a ton more endurance. It's good for our hearts, good for our blood pressure, but so is interval training. So the way I usually do it, I will sometimes do it on a treadmill. So I do a 30-second sprint and then I walk quite slowly for 2 to 3 minutes, depending on how conditioned I am to doing it. Or we'll use the ski erg. The Y that I go to has one of those sort of upright rowers where you're like, it's like you're cross-country skiing. Those are great if you have issues with your joints, or if I'm outside, I'll do a stair run, stair sprint, which is where I'm going after this podcast, or run up a hill, just something that gets your heart rate up really high. So we're aiming for 100 to 110% of our VO2 max. And again, if you're new to this, you're not going to start there. You're going to start with something easier, slower, and work your way up to it. In our Learn to Lift program, we have ropes available. So we do the battle ropes for about 30 seconds, and that can get your heart rate up quite high. That type of interval training is great for not only cardiovascular health, fat burning, and also can be really helpful for hot flashes and night sweats, because it's like, it's teaching the brain to, it moves a lot of blood around the body very quickly, and it's teaching and training the brain to dilate the vessels and cool the body down more quickly, which is cool. Yeah.
Fascinating. Which is this the same, sprint training and HIIT training kind of the same?
So sprint training, or SIT, sprint interval training, is a subset of HIIT training, a high intensity interval training. So HIIT training is a little bit longer duration. It can be like 4 to 5 minutes, but SIT is a subset of HIIT. And it's a little, it's better for women during the transition to do SIT training rather than a lot of HIIT training. So lots of classes are HIIT style, where you're going from station to station and there's not really a lot of rest worked in, whereas SIT is slightly different. So if someone loves doing HIIT training, I will keep a HIIT training session in their program. And I'll add a SIT training. If they're not doing any HIIT, I'll have them do two rounds of SIT a week.
Okay.
Yes.
I want to do the Learn to Lift program. So I think you need to figure out how to offer this online.
I know. I do. But yeah.
Yes, please. Just put me on number one on the list. Okay. Just contact me when you've got it figured out. I want to know how to do this. Cause I think for a lot of women, especially our age, where there's that, as I talked about earlier, there's that sort of intimidation factor, you know, for a lot of reasons. I don't want to show up on the weight floor with a bunch of super muscly 22-year-old dudes and think that I'm not going to look like a fool. I will look like a fool. Getting some experience helps.
That was one of the drivers to build this program out, is to have a small group, private gym environment with all women, where I'm teaching you, breaking down the movements slowly, because that was the thing. I've spent so much time in practice telling people they need to get into the weight room, but people are intimidated by the weight room. They don't want to hurt themselves. They don't know what they're doing. And so just spending time teaching and getting that muscle memory down is so important to build confidence, so that they can then go across the street to the Y and be in the weight room with all the dudes and the teenagers and not have to worry about those things.
Yeah. I love that. Please keep going on that program.
Thank you.
We need it.
I will.
We need it.
Yeah,
and when you are ready to make it online, let me know. I will let my people know, because we need it.
There will be an online component to it, like alongside the in-person sessions that we do together. There are sort of podcast style recordings that I send to the that are available to the participants, to the athletes, I like to call them.
Oh, I love that. I'd fall over if somebody called me that.
Well, anyone exercising on purpose is an athlete. And when you view yourself as such, then you train more specifically. And I think it's a good mentality to take on when you're training.
That is a
We don't have to
mindset
be
win.
like, we don't have to be professional athletes to be athletes. We're all athletes if we're exercising on purpose.
Oh, I love that. I love that shift in mindset. A mindset win for sure, to say, as I'm going to say that to my husband today when we go to the gym later. I'm going to say, we're athletes. Did you know, honey?
You are. You absolutely are.
That's extraordinary. I love it. Is there anything else you'd like to share that we haven't talked about?
I don't think so. There's one supplement I want to mention quickly, and creatine is it. The WHO put that on their list of essential supplements for women a year or two ago. And creatine is very, very helpful, especially for females, because we have less creatine in our systems than men do. I think it's like 80% less, which is part of why we don't build muscle as easily as men do. It's great for the brain. It's great for the liver. It's great for mood. There's some studies on depression and creatine, but it's mainly used as a muscle building supplement. So it helps us to recycle ATP in our body and helps us have more powerful lifts and gain strength.
Wow, who doesn't
So
need
yeah,
that?
I love creatine.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing. What's your amount? How much do you take on a daily basis?
So the recommendation is 3 to 5 grams a day.
Can we get that from food?
You can get creatine from animal proteins, yes, but I don't think you can get 3 to 5 grams. You can't get as much from, you need the top up from the supplement. It's very, very safe too. It's really well studied. It's probably the most studied supplement out there. Highly recommend that for women. I mean, I
Okay.
can't prescribe it to anyone who's listening. Ask
Of
your
course
doctor
not.
first.
Of course not. Wait, I can.
But you can.
I can. Go
Yes.
ahead. 3 to 5 grams a day. Take a look at me. Clean source, people. Oh my God, please look at your source.
Creatine monohydrate's very widely available.
Oh, Ontario. We need to talk. Awesome. So, where can people find out more about you if they want to learn about you, Dr. Wright?
Yes, they can go to my Instagram. So it's dr.wright.nd. So Dr. Wright ND. That's where I hang out the most. My website, which needs a desperate rebrand, is called thrivingfamilies.ca. If you go to thrivingfamilies.ca/learn-to-lift, you'll find all the information about my Learn to Lift program. That's where you can find me.
Amazing. So it's time for the final question. And the final question I ask all my guests is the same. And it's this: knowing what you know now, what would you tell your younger self?
My younger self lifted weights, so I can't tell her that. This has nothing to do with my practice
Doesn't have to
or
be.
building muscle. Just be who you are. Be who you are.
Love that.
And don't let other people dictate who you need to be.
That's good parenting advice too, isn't it?
I have three
Siobhan.
kids.
Oh, so you know this. You know this. You
I
teach them this.
know.
Thank you for the time today. I'm so grateful for you on the show today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Fiona.
The information and other content provided in this show or in any linked materials is not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. Nor is the information a substitute for professional medical expertise or treatment. We are doctors, but we aren't your doctor. Seek your doctor's opinion. If you or any other person has a medical concern, you should consult with your healthcare provider or seek other professional medical treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something that you have heard in this podcast or in any linked materials. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or emergency services immediately. The opinions and views expressed on this page and in this show have no relation to those of any academic, hospital, health practice, or other institution. Thank you.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Women in the menopause transition are losing 2-3% of bone density per year, along with the loss of lean muscle mass. Our bones and our muscles give us strength, stability, flexibility, and are metabolically active, keeping us youthful. In fact, the muscles are our key to longevity. Thanks to the brilliant guest experts I've had on the Not Your Mother's Menopause podcast, I understand the importance of getting enough protein daily to build lean muscle and maintain bone density. I can struggle to eat enough protein daily. Even when I was eating protein at every meal, I still wasn't getting enough. So I take Keon Aminos daily to support and supplement my diet. Keon Aminos ensures that you are getting the essential amino acids from protein your body needs to build muscle and keep energetic and strong. Keon Aminos is clean source, transparent formula that gets mixed into water and tastes good. It is suitable for all diets and is gluten and dairy free. When I take Keon Aminos, I feel satisfied, full, and hydrated. It keeps sugar cravings at bay, my mental health is better, and I sleep better. I feel strong and ready for whatever might come my way. Strong, flexible, healthy, for my whole life is my aim. If you would like to supplement protein intake with Keon Aminos, please visit getkeon.com/lovely, where Keon is offering 20% off for the listeners of the show. That's getkeon, GETKION.com/lovely, for 20% off your order of Keon Aminos. Thanks, Keon.